Good morning, Vox. I want to be one of the first to say Merry Christmas to you all. When I signed up in the fall to give the homily on this date, I knew it was going to be the fourth and the final week of Advent, but I didn't know it was going to be the Christmas service. And so when I realized this, I had this flood of images and feelings rush to the surface for me. I grew up in the Methodist Church, and there were always these kind of beautiful red poinsettias all over the altar. And after the service, all the old ladies would fight for them, kind of like all the Vox kids with the communion bread. And we had this choir booming in the corner, and it was the cold Midwest, and so everyone had on turtlenecks and ugly Christmas sweaters back when they were just called Christmas sweaters. And it was this feeling of love and intimacy. And I'm not going to lie, I started to freak out a little bit. Like, how am I going to reproduce that feeling for people on a Sunday morning online? And it almost turned into a product that I was trying to deliver, especially in a really difficult season. But what I love about the Christmas story is that it does what it has always intended to do, to bring heaven down to earth, where our high hopes are redirected to where the love can be born, grow, and live. It's often in the spaces we tend to diminish, hide, and overlook. That is the incarnation of Christ we celebrate. Today, we're going to be looking at all of this from the perspective of Mary to help ground and guide us in what it means to not overlook the divine in our lives. We're going to be focusing on the last line of the passage, verse 38. So let's go there now. So Mary has just been approached by the angel Gabriel and told of this divine plan, which totally throws a wrench in her plans and any concept of who she was going to be. She had just one logistical birds and bees question, and the rest was this response here. She says, "For nothing will be impossible with God. Here am I, the servant of the Lord. Let it be with me according to your word." She says, "Here am I," reminiscent of Isaiah 6:8, when he says, "Here I am, Lord, send me." This is typically preached as having faith to move into uncomfortable spaces for God, which is beautiful. But what is striking to me in this passage is that Mary is already well beyond her comfort zone. I like to forget this fact because it's wildly uncomfortable. But Mary's like 12 or 13. Right? And she's about to get married, and she's traveling to a new place with very little support. It's easy to say, "Here am I," when we are in our comfort zones, but it can be a terrifying thing to speak them when we're outside of them. To speak those words is to be willing to be seen. Scott Erickson, in his book Honest Advent, on sale now, says this: incarnation is the process of becoming seen. To be seen is to allow yourself to be known. To be known is to risk being loved or not. What is beautiful is that for the incarnation to be seen among us, Mary too had to be willing to be seen. The moment we are willing to be seen, we enter into a battle of acceptance and rejection. How much rejection are we willing to risk to get the acceptance our hearts long for? Many of you know my wife, Erin. She works within the home, and much of her life looks like this for her: soaking up all of the wonderful moments and trying to stay sane and all the others. Erin is an artist, and she very much has the artist conflict within her. that I want to be seen and I do not want to be seen. Some of you can relate. And how this has played out for her is that for most of her life, she has dabbled in a lot of different art forms, but has never allowed herself to deepen into one. To try her best and then to be seen as merely mediocre would be too overwhelming. She wanted to be seen, but not rejected. And all of this changed a couple years ago when she decided to deepen into a craft and open up Blue Ink Moon. She started embroidering hoops and had the idea of adding watercolors and inks to them, something she hadn't ever seen before, and it piqued her interest. And so you can see right here, this is her first go at it. And then she started to get a little bit more intricate and personal. And she tried different styles, like a century plant, which is gorgeous. And this is one of her latest hoops. And it's been cool to see her not only grow as an artist, but to see all of this as a vehicle to being a more confident, patient, and resilient person. There is a deep satisfaction that the invisible that lives inside of her can be brought into existence and matter to others. About a month ago, Dane Good, a photographer working on a series of Austin artists, contacted her to be a part of a series. Her initial reaction was a hard no. She didn't want to be exposed as a fraud, but she ended up working herself to saying yes. And this is what her yes, her here I am, looks like. Not of the ego, but of participation, being willing to be seen. On the surface, it recognizes her accomplishments, but when I look deeper, this photo honors not just her courage to be seen, but her inherent lovability that exists far before she deepened into anything. And this was true of Mary as well. In all of her youth, her fear and transition, this is how Gabriel greets her. He says, "Good morning. You're beautiful with God's beauty. Beautiful inside and out. God be with you." There's a deep beauty in that. For the word to be made flesh, it required Mary to have her own kind of incarnation that we might call maybe being more human. And what we see here is that love precedes us before we ever step up to the plate. And so for a spiritual practice, ask yourself, where do you find yourself managing acceptance and rejection in your life right now? Notice what stories and emotions come up for you. Let's look at the second piece of Mary's reply here. She says, "Let it be with me." And what I want to focus on are those three words, "let it be." "Let it be" has this essence of acceptance and letting go. Just as Mary was wrapping her mind around transitioning from childhood to adulthood, here comes a totally new reality, which can often be disruptive. And it isn't just the quick left turns that brings life our way, difficult to accept, but it also shows us what Tolle calls the quality of our consciousness. How sidetracked are we? How closed off are we to the life that is emerging before us? Are we there for it? I remember sitting in the Petillo's home on New Year's Eve, talking about the hopes of a new year and decade. And it was only a matter of weeks later that we heard the news that John was diagnosed with cancer. And when I heard that he was going to have surgery and that it would leave him permanently connected to a bag, It was really, really hard. I found myself struggling to move forward. And it wasn't really about the bag as much as me struggling with the reality that my daughter's Ninong, my dear friend's life, was at stake. And even in the best case scenario, his life was being irreparably changed. And I remember standing in John's driveway, feeling sad with brittle hope. And John was talking about the up-and-coming surgery, and I asked him about living with a bag. And he said this very cogently: "It's a bag or death. And if it means I can have life, that's a really easy trade-off for me." It was his acceptance of what was that settled me right down. And it was in his letting go that redirected me away from trying to hold all of those New Year's discussions and open up to what is vital and emerging. And I know that this whole process has pushed John and Amy to the brink, but I have been taken aback by their will and ability to move forward, accepting what is emerging now, however it presents itself. Poet Lucille Clifton says this of letting go: "The leaves believe such letting go is love. Such love is faith. Such faith is grace. Such grace is God." I agree with the leaves. Mary not only was willing to be seen, but she was able to do the mental and emotional gymnastics of being present to the now and overwhelming, which she continually lived in during Jesus' life and death. What makes Mary a hero in my book is that she had the ability to let go of what she had just been holding onto long enough to find acceptance for the new emergent moment. And so as a spiritual practice, pick an aspect of your life you struggle accepting and follow Tolle's suggestion of doing one of three actions: removing it, letting go, changing it, or fully embracing it, acceptance. Let's go on to this last line here. So Mary says, "Here am I, let it be with me according to your word." And what I want to focus on is according to your word. My mind goes quickly to the first chapter of John, right? Which says, "In the beginning was the word, and the word was with God, and the word was God." Continues down saying, "In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind, the light that shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it." So when Mary says, "Let it be according to your word," it can also read, "Let it be according to God, to life. Let it be according to the impenetrable light." And this reveals that her "let it be-ness," it's a thing, is connected to her faith and trust in the goodness of God, particularly in the uncertain and scary times. God decided to show up in the uncomfortable space of a young couple having a child before marriage, choosing a young girl in a patriarchal Middle East society where firstborns were being killed by the king. This is where God decides to be with Mary and to be with us. It was within these spaces that we encounter the genesis of love, of working through the swirling, confusing concoction of our intuition, faith, and inexperience. We want to look up for love, but Mary's courageous love and faithful attendance to Jesus brings us back down to earth, to look at our own spaces within ourselves that we fear, dismiss, shame, and overlook, and to give them legitimacy as the genesis of God's love for us and eventually through us. And I think that is one of the bigger things that I grieve. While I miss celebrating Christmas with you today, I more sorely miss the overlooked moments that we have together. And so before I end with a poem, I want to share some photos of people in our community to celebrate the small moments that bring about the love and joy that we miss so much. So first off, this is my little girl, Tess, having a pretty great day. Tutu, skateboard, and a choking hazard. And then we have little Lincoln and Fiola having even a better day. Incredibly cute. And then here's Ansley having what looks like the best day of all of them. These are her Christmas photos, which are pretty amazing. And then you have these two masked lovebirds, Sam and Gina, just getting done with their civil duties of voting. We miss them dearly. And then you have you have Nick telling us what he thinks of this year's election. It's so good. And then you have Jason bringing it all home for us. I'm guessing this is in Arizona and that is a saguaro cactus. And that has to be one of the coolest orange outfits I've ever seen. But I am very colorblind, so that might not be orange at all. Either way, Jason, you are rocking it. I continually look up to find the love of God. And the love of God continually points me to you all. It's not just in the pageantry of Christmas that I miss you all, but it is in the small day-to-day living that I can so overlook. And I want to end with a poem as my prayer. It's from Micah Bourne's book entitled Here Comes the Dreamer. This piece is called Where It Will Come From. Something tiny, so small I can smuggle it in my pocket, but I don't. Pockets and sleeves are too obvious. People expect wealth and magic to come from them, even when empty, especially when empty. The barren fridge I keep opening, fully aware of its famine, still searching its shelves for something tiny, something simple, hidden in the last place I would think to hide things. Not hidden at all, overlooked, faithful in its forgottenness. Still there when I return from chasing each mirage, it has always been something tiny. A million tiny things, ant-like, parading across my unkept hope, each one carrying joy well beyond its weight. In the love of the Father, the joy of the Son, and the presence and the perseverance of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Merry Christmas.